Hey, welcome back to 7-Minute Books. I'm Sam, and we're diving into Reed Meitenbuehler's Bourbon Empire. Sophie, I gotta ask, did you know how much of what we think about bourbon is basically a tall tale?
Right? I mean, I knew there was some marketing fluff, but this book really goes deep. It's not just about whiskey, it's about American capitalism, rebellion, and how a drink became a symbol. Meitenbuehler argues that bourbon is less a product of ancient tradition and more a creation of modern industry and government policy.
Yeah, and it starts way before Kentucky. He traces it back to the late 1700s, when farmers in the Appalachian frontier couldn't ship their corn east. It would rot, so they distilled it into whiskey, which was portable and didn't spoil. It was basically currency.
Exactly. And almost immediately, the government stepped in. Alexander Hamilton put a tax on distilled spirits in 1791 to pay off Revolutionary War debt, and also to assert federal authority over the frontier. That led to the Whiskey Rebellion, farmers rising up, and George Washington himself leading an army to crush them. So from the start, bourbon is tied to defiance and taxation.
It's wild, and in the name, bourbon itself, he debunks the whole Elijah Craig story, right? The idea that a Baptist minister invented charred oak barrels by accident.
Yeah, that's a myth. The name probably comes from Bourbon County, Kentucky, named after the French royal family. And charring barrels? That was a practical thing. Distillers reused barrels that had held fish or pork, and they'd char the inside to clean them. It caramelized the wood sugars and smoothed the whiskey. Accidental innovation.
Right? And then the 19th century was just chaos. Rectifiers would buy raw whiskey and doctor it with prune juice, tobacco, chemicals, anything to fake age and flavor. No quality control at all.
Then the Civil War and a huge tax on whiskey to fund it. That tax never went away. It forced small distillers out and consolidated the industry. And it created moonshiners, illegal distillers who became folk heroes. That rebellious image stuck.
One of my favorite parts was George Garvin Brown. In 1870, he started selling whiskey in sealed, labeled bottles, Old Forester. That was radical. Before that, you bought it by the barrel and the saloon poured it into your own bottle. You had no idea what you were getting.
Right, that's the birth of branding. He guaranteed consistency. And that brand is still around today. But then Prohibition hit, the 18th Amendment in 1920. The legitimate industry was basically wiped out. Except for a loophole, medicinal whiskey could be sold by prescription. That kept a few distilleries alive, including Pappy Van Winkle's.
And Prohibition created this dark romance around drinking, speakeasies, bootleggers, and gangsters. When it was repealed in 1933, the survivors had a huge head start. They had the aging stock and the know-how.
Then the mid-20th century was a golden age of volume, not quality. Brands like Jim Beam and Wild Turkey became household names. But there was a brutal price war, and the industry consolidated even more.
And in the 1970s, the bourbon bust. Vodka and white rum got trendy, health craze hit, and sales collapsed. Distilleries closed, barrels sat unsold. But that glut of cheap, aged whiskey actually set the stage for the modern renaissance.
Right.
Entrepreneurs bought up old stock and bottled it as small batch or single barrel. A guy named Booker No started bottling uncut, unfiltered whiskey from select barrels. That was a revelation. Suddenly, people wanted authenticity and craftsmanship.
But here's the irony Meitenbuehler really hammers home. The modern boom is built on scarcity. A 10-year-old bourbon was made 10 years ago when the industry was still in the dumps. So demand far outstrips supply. You've got bottles of Pappy Van Winkle going for thousands on the secondary market.
And the marketing?
It's all about tradition, small batches, family recipes. But the truth is, the vast majority of bourbon comes from just a handful of massive companies, Beam Suntory, Brown-Forman, Heaven Hill, Sazerac. They own dozens of brands and often source whiskey from each other.
Yeah, that craft distillery you love? They might just be buying whiskey from a giant, and rebottling it. Meitenbühler calls it the dirty secret of the boom.
But he doesn't hate the industry. He's a bourbon lover. He just wants us to see past the label, understand the economics, the politics, the real story. When you sip that amber liquid, you're tasting history and a lot of corporate strategy.
So my takeaway? I'm going to be a lot more skeptical of the story on the bottle, and I'll appreciate the drink more for what it actually is, a product of luck, innovation, and raw capitalism.
And if you want to dive deeper into books like this, the whole library's over at 7minutebooks.com/app. Over 6,000 fiction and nonfiction titles you can read or listen to in any language. It's $2.99 a month, $9.99 a year, or $19.99 for lifetime access.
Well, I'm ready for a pour of something real. Sophie, thanks for walking through this with me.
Always a pleasure. Bourbon Empire reminds us that the best stories are the messy, true ones. We'll see you in the next one.